Is Caden Groves the best sprinter at the Vuelta?
No.
Will Remco Evenepoel wear the world champion jersey during the time trial?
Yes. No.
Will we see an Ineos Grenadier in the top five of the final GC?
Yes.
Should Yves apologize for his statement about Sepulveda and the rest of Lotto Destiny?
Absolutely.
I've got the sparse, the sickness, there's the twins in my brain.
We are five stages into the last Grand Tour of the season, but it feels like there's been 20 stages already. To say that the race organizers have been criticized is a bit of an understatement. Rider safety is still not at the top of the agenda at ASO. From riding in the pitch dark to controversial neutralizations and extremely short runoffs after line, it's been a wild, drama-filled week at La Vuelta. Temperatures in Belgium have gone down slightly in the past week, so there are a few more domestiques that are able to perform again. I'm joined again by Yves, and I'm happy to welcome back Dieter and Hannes. How are you guys?
Good, thank you.
I made a light joke out of it, but of course I hope you recovered well from the heat during the social ride. Yves and I already spoke about it last week, but are you both joining again next year?
I'm definitely am.
In better form, hopefully.
I hope so too.
Let's hope so. And that's great to hear. Well, let's dive right into this Vuelta like it's a refreshing pool after a hot day. We start off with stage one, the now infamous team time trial. Yves, walk us through the drama.
Well, it started with rain. It ended with rain, but it ended with darkness as well. The start was scheduled at 7 o'clock, the first team, I think, around 7 o'clock in the evening. And for the first teams, it was not too dark yet. It was rainy, so there were clouds, and it was darker than usual in Barcelona. But a couple of hours later, when the big teams like Quickstep, etc., had to start their effort, it was dark. It was actually unacceptable that they had to ride like that. There was no street lights. The street lights weren't on. And yeah, you have to imagine it's wet, so you already take a lot more risks. And then when it's dark, you see, with the words of Remco Evenepoel, you see shit. When you are riding 50 k's an hour, 60 k's an hour in a swimsuit, basically because it doesn't protect at all, the cycling clothes, it's unacceptable for me.
It's crazy that situations like this still happen at one of the biggest races of the year. Hannes, what do you think they could have done differently?
Yeah, what they could have done differently? Like everything, in my opinion. Race a few hours earlier, for instance. In cases like these, you see it's, as most often, all about the money. I read something that ASO wanted to have a news flash with the results in the news on the television in the evening in Spain. But if that's the point that makes us race in the evening, then that's pretty ridiculous in my opinion.
I agree. Let's actually talk about the race. We had a very surprising winner with Team DSM Firmenich, but I have to say that I was also very surprised by Movistar, who rode equally fast without seeing where they're going, because they were the second to last team to ride. Clearly, they're ready to go to war for Enric Mas. Did we underestimate that team?
I did.
I definitely did as well.
We did for the time trial, for sure.
But in general, I think I didn't expect the team and Mas to be that strong. He already showed it on Monday as well, that he's in a more than decent shape. I expected him to be worse, to be honest. Certainly after his early crash into the France and his screwed preparation towards the...
But we've seen one mountain stage so far, so I think it's hard to say how he performs right now.
that we've seen one mountain stage, and he wasn't amongst the riders who lost time. There are other GC favorites who are already can stop dreaming about GC and go for stage wins, and Mas is still in the mix for general classification.
That's true, but for me, it's a little too early to already say that he's performing really good. He's performing good, that's for sure, but I want to see what's coming next.
Like, it's either way, it's crazy how talented Mas is. Like, he crashed out of the tour, had to recover from that. Then he crashed on training after, and we're like, what is it? Not even 2 months after the start of the tour, and he's already in surely in decent shape, because otherwise you aren't with the best 12 in the finish from 2 days ago. So yeah.
Definitely. Also, they rode in pretty similar conditions to Soudal Quickstep, and they went 6 seconds faster. While I would have rated Soudal Quickstep team as time trialist quite a bit higher.
Yeah, it's quite weird for me, actually, because besides Lascano and Garcia Cortina, I don't know who else is on that team, but they don't really have riders who can go very fast on flat terrain. It's more like a climber team. They are known to be a climber team, and right now in a time trial where you need big engines, or you should have big engines to perform it, they perform the best teams. So is it because they took more risks, maybe?
Exactly. Did they take more risks than the other GC guys? I don't know. Only thing I know is that it's pretty hard to compare the times we have right now due to the circumstances. But yeah, very good performance of Movistar for sure.
I remember doing that live, and the final corner was a very tricky one because a couple of teams already crashed there, Arkea and Jayco amongst them. And they went into that corner so fast that even their commentators, the Belgian commentators, said, What the hell, they are taking a lot of risks. So, and we only saw that corner because the coverage was crap as well. Let's not forget that. Mainly due to more risks, I think.
I joked after the team time trial in our chat that all Movistar guys probably haven't seen a wind tunnel from the inside, but I think that's literally true, and they are second in a team time trial. Maybe Mas and Lascano have been in a wind tunnel, but and Oliveira, but Lascano punctured, I think, so he wasn't even in the group. And Mas didn't take a lot of pulls, and I think like Oliveira was the biggest engine. So yeah, it's ridiculous that they wrote that result. Amazing performance.
I've got a question for you guys. Afterwards on Twitter, I read a lot of comments, people blaming CPA president Adam Hansen. But do you think we can blame the CPA for this? Or is this a big mistake by UCI or both?
I personally don't think the CPA is to blame for this. It's easy to blame them. In the end, you have to put the blame at the organizers, saying you're organizing a race that started at 7 p.m. And the sunset is scheduled for 10 minutes after the last team sets off. And that's on a bright day. It wasn't a bright day. Mm. So,
and the race organizers made the mistake, but all the teams, all the DSs knew already a couple of days before the actual start that they would have, that they would be in trouble with the sun going down, because everybody knew the sun would go down at 8:30 or whatever it was. So why didn't they complain earlier?
Yeah, but I think the start order was only released on Friday afternoon. So that's one day before.
They knew there would be teams starting that late. And it would be quite weird to say, oh, we start 1 hour earlier. 1 hour earlier, we will not complain. So why not go into the race?
I get your point. Yeah. But do you think it would have been a solution for the last teams to refuse to start, for instance?
No, it had to be decided before the first team started.
Agreed.
All right.
Then I have one more point. Malaysia was the first from DSM to cross line and has given the red jersey. Do you think there was a special reason for this?
He didn't take a pool in the U23 world, so we thought I'm going to take a pool in this time trial maybe.
He has had a pretty special week coming out of the worlds.
Definitely, yeah.
To have the winning the world championship TT, then being very close to winning it on the road for the U23, and then taking the red jersey in the Vuelta. It's an incredible week.
And then a miserable day after, sadly.
Thank you for the nice segue. we'll go on to stage two. This was a stage between Mataro and Barcelona. Plenty of drama here before the start, as there were a lot of teams asking for neutralization of the final 9Ks due to very heavy rainfall and slippery ropes. The organizer initially put a plan forward to neutralize the final descent after Montjuic. Did we ever get confirmation from our listeners about which one was a correct pronunciation, by the way? I didn't see it. Maybe Eve knows by now.
It's correct.
Great. Writers like Evenepoel shot down that plan and so ended up agreeing to neutralize the final 9K eventually. But they kept the bonification seconds at the top of Montjuic and at the line. That sounds like a lot of mixed messaging. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's another mistake by, first of all, race organizers. They took the right decision to neutralize the final 9K. So there would be less risks in the downhill and towards the finish. But leaving that bonification seconds on top of that final hill and at the finish still created some sort of incentive for a couple of riders, or could have created incentive for a couple of riders, that eventually didn't happen. But the funniest part was that there wasn't a video footage of the bonification sprint on that last hill. So they had to look at videos from spectators to see who crossed the line first on top of that hill. And yeah, I think a race in Ypres is better organized and has some better coverage than one of the big Grand Tours of the season.
Well, there was already a lot of pressure on the organization after what happened on Saturday. And I was wondering, would they have made the same decision for Sunday after they... Imagine they wouldn't have had troubles on Saturday. Would they have taken the same decision on Sunday? What do you think?
No.
I don't. But I also don't think... Well. I also don't think... I don't agree with what Yves said, to be honest. I think the bonification seconds weren't that crazy to hold them at the hill, at the top of the hill, and at the finish. Like, if you want to race, you race. Like, if Remco, Ayuso, who wanted to race, wanted to take those bonification seconds, okay, it's your own risk, go for it. If you don't want it, yeah, don't go for it and just go easy in the peloton. So I think that was a good decision, to be honest.
I think it's one of those examples where the peloton sort of regulates itself. I strongly get the feeling that there was an agreement among all the GC guys.
Yeah. Like,
none of us are going for it because it's not worth it for any of us to crash out. So I really like that initiative. But Eve, I think the first moment has come to have a first discussion about Lotto Destiny. In the preview episode, neither of us was very optimistic about their chances, but I think you had some strong words for that team. But here we are at stage two, and they win it with Andreas Kron. Did that change your mind already?
Ooh, didn't expect that question. Did it change my mind? Well, if I recall correctly, it was Van Eetveld and Kron who were the first two Lotto Destiny riders. I have to say, very impressive attack by Kroon. I had my domestic pick on Grégoire, and he just didn't have an answer on that attack. So kudos to Kroon for that win, and kudos to Van Eetveld for being there. Does it change my mind from Lotto Destiny? No. And does it change my mind for another rider within that team in the Vuelta? No. But it was a very impressive win, and a deserved one, because no one was able to follow his wheel.
We'll get back to that, I think.
There's definitely more to talk about later on. Is there anything else that we can learn from stage two?
Well,
Caden Groves.
Mm-hmm. Very impressive indeed.
Second place. Definitely shows that he's able to get over the punchier climbs as well. So, I mean, pretty much all the sprinters have shown that they're managing quite well over the climbs. But the Montjuic climb is something different. And yeah, Caden Groves taking the second place kind of out of nowhere, because the TV coverage was also a bit shit.
A bit.
On Groves, in the Volta Limburg Classic, not a very known race, not a very big race, but it was in March or April this year. Rain, but like ice rain, crazy conditions. He won that race, if I recall correctly, but like with a crazy power foul. He's not your regular sprinter. Like, he's not just a guy who can make it over hill. He's leaning towards classics rider. He's that good. So yeah.
So he can compete for the win in Hans Wevelhem next year, maybe.
I think so. Yeah. If yeah, I
Thomas
think,
is
I think
shaking
he's,
his head.
It's pretty. In a certain way, you can compare him with Koi, I think.
I think he's on a higher level than
Koi. Korhan Twevelhem, I rate Koi higher, to be honest. I think for Groves, it kind of depends on the circumstances of the race. What happens after Camelberg, on Camelberg. If there's a big bunch chasing a small amount of attackers, then it's possible, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, it depends on the race.
Yeah, he's not going to follow Van der Poel and Van Aert on the Camelberg or something, obviously. And he also has the problem with Jasper Philipsen in the team. Yeah. Also pretty good rider.
Pretty, yeah.
All right. Into the mountains we go then, towards Andorra. With Col d'Ordino and the climb to Arenzal, the stage was set for a first GC battle. Remco Evenepoel ended up drawing first blood on the line and after the line. did we learn anything else about the upcoming GC battle?
No.
Well, I don't think we can say we learned anything about the big GC battle. Not when it comes to Remco versus Ayuso Vingegaard, I think. Remco's final sprint was longer than I expected. And also stronger than I expected. I think he was really strong going to the line. He was a more than deserved winner, but still a lot of people say he has a certain arrogance about him for his celebration. And even people said after the team time trial on Saturday that what he said, it's something typical Remco Evenepoel, but yeah, I don't really agree with that. It was the first time he went to the line, I think, against Vingegaard. He won in a kind of impressive way. And then I think it's you can do what he did, I think.
He even opened up a second gap. So I think that's it's definitely true. And when it comes to what he said at the team time trial, none of what he said was wrong. So
no.
I think he has the right to say those things. He did.
I think there are some conclusions to be made about GC riders. Like, first of all, if you got dropped on the stage because the pace wasn't high, you're going to have a hard time this Vuelta. And Juan Ayuso, he's a guy, and Tijmen Arendsman, two guys. They are two guys who get better when the volume and the KJ is further in the Grand Tour, when those two numbers race. And Arendsman was dropped a little back, but he also had something. I don't recall what, but he had some bad luck. And Juan Ayuso got third on the stage, but could have finished second if Marc Soler didn't unintentionally rode a little in the way of Ayuso. And I think Ayuso is, he really loves volume. He doesn't seem to mind it. And I only have gotten more happy with my Juan Ayuso pick for GC.
Both Ineos Grenadiers leaders seem to be suffering a bit, one due to an earlier crash, I believe, with Thomas. Mm-hmm. Dieter, you wrote on Twitter that you're actually quite impressed with the performance of Tijmen Arendsman this early in a Grand Tour. Mm-hmm. Could you give a little bit more explanation on that?
Yeah, like the thing Ayuso has, Arendsman has that to times 10. Like if he doesn't have volume in his legs, he's pretty shit, to be honest. And if he was happy himself too with the performance. We saw it in this year's Vuelta, this year's Giro, last year's Vuelta. He just gets better and better in a Grand Tour relative to other riders, but his numbers also literally improve. Like, that's normally unseen. You can improve relative to other GC guys by being able to handle the volume better, but his numbers improve through to a GC, a Grand Tour. Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. Allison?
Yeah, I've got a question for Dieter. Dieter, you express yourself as the Vingegaard expert during Tour de France. Did you learn anything already about Jonas in that first mountain stage?
Normally, a guy who does the Tour Vuelta double suffers in week one, early week two. Vingegaard already got seconds while having shit legs. He said so himself. So if those were shit legs, if he's going to get into his form a little better, the other GC guys will cry in end week two and week three.
But still, you're saying Ayuso is your pick. What makes you believe in him?
I think his level is higher than Roglic and Evenepoel's level. I think if you have those four guys on top level, only Vingegaard can beat him. But we never have seen Jonas doing a Grand Tour double, so he may also fade out at the end. So that's why Ayuso is a more certain pick for me, while Jonas' level is higher.
What about Roglic?
He did crash.
Did he crash in the Monday stage?
Yes, together with Thomas.
With Geraint Thomas, yeah.
He said he wasn't sprinting because he suffered too much after the crash, I think.
But nevertheless, his level isn't high enough to match Ayuso, Vingegaard, Remco.
So you're convinced Vingegaard is the big leader at Jumbo?
Yeah, I would definitely keep them both in GC. Like, Jonas crashes tomorrow if you sacrifice Roglic and Jonas crashes, you look like a donkey.
And all of a sudden, Sepp Kuss attacked. How interesting is that?
Amazing.
I thought it was pretty obvious why he would do that. He lives there.
If Jumbo-Visma if they use him the right way, he could be really interesting for GC.
Yeah, definitely.
I think I said that to Eve as well. The problem with Remco Evenepoel is that he will be outnumbered when there's a big GC group. Like, UAE has multiple cards to play, Jumbo has multiple cards to play, and if those two teams attack together, Remco needs to save it himself. So,
I mean, from what we've seen from Roglic, he's fine with closing a gap on Jonas himself and taking Remco in his wheel. So if that's the tactics that those teams are playing, then I don't think it's actually going to be a problem.
Imagine at a certain point, Jay Vine or Almeida attacks with Roglic, then Ayuso and Vingegaard will sit there looking at Remco to close the gap. Then Remco is in trouble. And
closes the gap.
I didn't speak to Patrick Evenepoel, to be clear.
And talking about Jay Vine, how UAE used him was ridiculous in my eyes. I think he also wanted to show how strong he was. Like, I had the feeling when he heard that he had to pull, that he had the thought, fuck it, I'm going to pull all out and I'm going to show everyone how good I am. And when he started, there were like 40 guys left in the group. And when he finished his pull with a pretty big headwind, 12, 13 guys left in his wheel. That's bonkers. And it was a long pull. So I hope he convinced UAE of his amazing legs.
So you want UAE to have a third leader?
I would, yeah. And I would personally put Vine above Almeida.
Considering the difficulty that Almeida was in that stage. That's fair.
Almeida is always doing the same on the mountain. He drops and then comes back and gets
normally he drops at the bottom. Now he dropped at the top.
And he came back again quite smoothly. He was together with Thomas at one point, or Arendsman at one point, and then he...
But who brought him back?
Vine.
Vine. Exactly.
But can Vine, for once, not crash in the coming... 2 weeks and
that's the problem. Yeah, if he doesn't crash, it's like he has the level to literally win the Vuelta. He has the legs for it, but he just has to not crash. It's just that easy to be honest.
I wonder if away from his own team car.
I wonder if UAE brought him to the team as a team leader, or what did they promise to him, being a leader or having a free role at one point, and what's his role in this Vuelta? Is it
I hope Vine was smart enough to put a thing in his contract with like that he can be a leader in one Grand Tour a year or something, because that would be dumb. Otherwise you have 10 leaders 15 years at UAE. So
good luck having Tadej Pogacar and Kumar Ayuso as a teammate then.
Yeah,
like we already mentioned, Ayuso and Almeida have something in their contract that they don't have to domestique for Pogacar in a Grand Tour. So that's going to be a problem with only 3 Grand Tours on the agenda. So maybe let's create another Grand Tour with a good race organization. Grand Tour or something.
Wait for next year's Tour de France. I think Almeida will be there in support of Tadej Pogacar.
Ayuso is going to be there as well.
You spelled Ayuso wrong.
I don't think so, mate.
You'll go there, that's for sure.
Then we're the two of us.
All right. Time to go back to our favorite subject. This stage was animated by quite a strong breakaway that featured Kemna and Caruso, but also our favorite Argentinian. Sibyl Veyra. He's clearly not come to the Vuelta to help in the Milan Menton lead-out train, as I suggested. But it seems he's really going for the KOM classification. I know I don't have to ask Yves, but did any of you expect him to go for this?
Yeah, well, after I listened to a preview of my favorite podcast, I didn't believe him to do that, because he clearly won some shit races lately. No, I got to be honest, I didn't think I would see this. But yeah, let's say Yves wasn't right either in the preview.
It was he lives in Andorra, so he had all motivation to go for the stage. He also sorry for the preview, but he also attacked a day later, also in the second and last Andorra stage. So that was a big motivation for sure.
Right, Yves, any?
Why exactly are you wearing that Voxner thing?
I had a bet with Yves, the guy who lost the sprint in the domestique ride had to wear the band, and I didn't even get to the sprint. So fair that I had to wear it.
I thought you were a big Lotto Destiny fan.
Or that too.
Lotto, moi, Kampenaerts, yes.
About that Sepulveda thing, I don't have to add a lot, because after the allegations, Dieter sent me on Discord a couple of days ago, I'm going to quote José Mourinho, the living legend. If I speak, I'm in big trouble. I'm going to show it to the YouTube men here as well. So that's it. You're going to have an objective and as neutral as possible Eve from now on Domestic Cycling Podcast. I hope you enjoyed Eve 1.0, because now it's Eve 2.0. Let's move on. I love Lotto Destiny and Eduardo Sepulveda.
Who is your new favorite rider now?
Maxim van Hels.
Thank you.
It's good. It's good. All right. The next two stages are sprint stages, both of them won by the same Australian. Caden Groves was everyone's pick to take the green jersey home, and he seems to be fulfilling that prediction. After two sprint stages, do you see anyone who can challenge him for that jersey?
Alberto Dainese in a good position can...
For the stage or for the jersey?
Dainese is shit in positioning himself, and he also has a shit team to position him. So that makes it impossible to go for a green jersey in a Grand Tour while he easily has the capabilities for it physically.
Dainese was at the back of the bench today on the only hill that mattered, and he didn't look very comfortable. He never gonna compete for the green jersey with the climbing legs he has right now. He even said it himself yesterday, where the finish was a little bit more tough. He was behind that crash from Van den Berg, or he lost time because he took a corner wrong, and then he said my legs were completely empty. So even if he would have been in the right position, he wouldn't be in the mix for the win either, in my opinion. He just doesn't have the climbing legs he needs to win or compete for the green jersey, because this Vuelta doesn't suit a sprinter who doesn't have climbing legs.
At the moment, he doesn't have those legs, but normally... Like, I agree, at the moment he doesn't have amazing climbing legs, that's clear. But normally a Dainese in top shape is very good climbing.
I agree.
But and he also rode a very strong sprint today. Like, he completely screwed the last corner, and he came out of position 25 or something, and he still got fourth.
I rewatched the final right before we went on air, and he was... two or three wheels behind Ghana. So he was quite close to Pipo Ghana. And then Ghana isn't a sprinter or isn't known as a sprinter, and he was able to challenge Groves for the win. I just think Dainese doesn't have the top shape he needs to win a Grand Tour stage and to compete for the green jersey. And if he has to wait till his engines fire up, Groves will be 200 points
That's true. I agree. But I think he does have the chance to win a stage later in the Grand Tour, but the green jersey will already be long gone. I agree.
Yeah.
The battle is basically already over, in my opinion, as long as Groves stays on the bike. Like, he has 122 points. Dainese is in 16th place with 19 points. Then that's not possible. Vendrami is second. He was going for the green jersey. and in third place, Remco Evenepoel. But yeah.
Will the green jersey be for a sprinter? Or can Evenepoel, Vinigo, Roglic, I don't know, grab that jersey at the end of the Vuelta?
I think I still think of it for Groves.
Yeah, exactly, because Evenepoel took the points today at the intermediate sprint. In a lot of stages, there will be a breakaway taking those points. And Groves will take way more points in the real sprint stages, in my opinion. So I'm still going for Groves.
If you have a lot of sprinters and like you don't have one sprinter that dominates, you have seven sprinters who all win a stage, it's possible if a GC man, if a GC guy really dominates the Grand Tour, he can take points. But now you have Groves kind of dominating the sprints, then it's not going to work.
All right. On stage four, we had the late crash from Marijn van den Berg going into the final quarter, which disrupted the sprint. This caused Milano to launch a 350-meter effort. Dietrich, can you walk us through the numbers?
Yeah, first, going to pick in on Marijn van den Berg before talking about the numbers. Sad.
Your domestic crash, kick.
He was my... Yeah, exactly. He is an amazing bike handler, normally. But he... He went slightly too fast into the corner, and then there were some some people said that it was because the fences went a little in after the corner. But I rewatched the crash like 10 times, and even if the fences weren't placed like that, he still would have easily overcooked the corner. So he was fucked either way. And that made for Milano to do a very long sprint, like 350 meters, I think you said. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 25 seconds. It doesn't sound long, but it's, do it. I also wrote it in my analysis, do a 25 second sprint and you'll die. And he did 1,135 watts, if I recall correctly, for 24 seconds. That's a lot. Like you have, I have sauce for Strava. It's a Chrome extension and it gives a number on 100. How impressive an effort is. And it said 100. So it basically means it was like a top 1% sprint. Like sometimes you have those really crazy guys like Arnaud Delis. They sometimes go over 100%, but that's not something which happens a lot. So very impressive sprint by Milano, and even more from Caden Groves. Very sad he didn't share his power data, because I'm very curious.
All right. And then there's stage five, which I personally didn't watch. And judging by our domestic live thread, I didn't really miss much. Who wants to talk us through that stage?
A lovely Argentinian guy was in the break in the final to take some KOM points, and I hope he takes that KOM jersey towards Madrid. Otherwise, I will let Hannes do the rest of the talk.
Well, it was a nice sprint. There was one guy in the break. You already know when there's one guy in the break, the peloton...
Please honor the guy and what's his name? Otherwise, he was in front of the peloton for the whole day.
What was his name?
Amazing position. He had his shifters more inside than me. His shifters were like, normally they are this, and his were like this. It was amazing. I love the guy. His front name is Eric, I think. Last name, don't remember.
Come on, Hannes.
All those hours.
Eric Fagundes from the Burgos team. He was alone in front. Then you think he will take the points on the only categorized climb of the day. But that didn't really happen, because Sepulveda attacked from the peloton took the 5 points. The legend, your friend, Heath. Yeah.
My friend, Eduardo. I love you.
In the descent, both of them, they were caught again by the peloton. Then we entered the final with 20 roundabouts in the final 20 kilometers. And of course, that's asking for a crash. What happened? Groves sprinted. He outsprinted Filippo Ganna.
I was listening to the coverage on GCN with Robbie McEwen. and there was a lot of architecture on the footage. We didn't see a lot of racing, and at one point they started to say it's only 12 roundabouts left till the finish, and they weren't talking about there are 5 kilometers left. So they were laughing so hard that they almost missed the finish.
To be honest, most of them were pretty safe, but yeah, there were 2 or 3 dangerous ones, but yeah, that's 2 or 3 too much in a final, of course. Bardet was involved in the crash, I think. Yeah. Also a domestique of Soudal Quickstep, which was Cataneo, probably. Uh-huh. And Milan Mantin, who had a pretty good day in stage 4. He was also in there, so.
It was pretty banged up, Mantin.
Yeah, he was pretty frustrated as well.
Yeah, I get that.
He crashed close to a McDonald's, because when the footage was there, I saw the McDonald's M right above his head, and I wanted to make a joke on it on Twitter, but I didn't do it because I wanted to know if he's okay.
Sure, also, you keep your eyes on the important stuff, that's for sure.
Kudos to Dries Van Gestel as well. Edouard Teuns was frustrated on him, but his results-wise.
Should he be relegated is the question.
Yeah.
I was going to say that, but you didn't let me finish my sentence. But results-wise, I think it's nice for him to have what he has, and definitely for Total Energies.
That's true.
Definitely. With the team that they brought, it's a really good result already.
Should he be relegated?
Yes.
Yeah. He also, it wasn't the one-time thing. He did the exact same thing yesterday.
Yeah. Did he use his head as well yesterday? Because now he was pushing turns first with his body, and then he used his head to completely block turns.
If turns would steer to the left, Van Gestel would just fall off his bike because he was leaning so much on turns. Like, come on, man.
All right. I have nothing to add about stage 5, but let's take a look at the GC. Oh, you do? Dieter, go ahead.
Ganna, he came out of 5th position, I think. He actually did a more impressive sprint than Caden Groves. And Caden Groves is a damn good sprinter. Like, I don't know how he peaked today because he still didn't upload him look really quick. But I would expect 1,500, 1,600 watts from Groves on what I know from him, from the Giro, etc. Last year's world, Groves didn't upload yet. So that means Ganna, the minimum Ganna pushed was also 1,500, 1,600 watts. Like, isn't that aero on a road bike either? And he literally went faster than Groves. So impressive. Didn't expect that at all.
Why did they let him sprint today and not yesterday? Because yesterday was a finish that suited him quite
even
well
better.
As well. Because in Tour de Wallonie, was it there that he won a sprint, or a couple of weeks ago where he won the general classification and a bunch sprint as well? I don't remember anymore where it was.
Also in the French Mickey Mouse race last year, also did a very good sprint. How is it called? Provence.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, his main priority is still to keep Geraint Thomas and probably Arensman in front of the peloton until 3 kilometers to go. That's what G said as well today. Like, keep me in front until that point, and then you can do whatever you want. And yesterday with the crash of Van den Berg, maybe he was there, maybe he was behind it. We don't know, but it was pretty hectic as well. So
the plan was also to lead out Hajduk today. It wasn't the plan that Ganna was going to sprint, but Hajduk was nowhere to be seen, I guess. So Ganna went for it himself. Hajduk is also pretty fast, to be honest. Like, he could go for a top 5 in a sprint, but he can't do what Ganna did today, to be fair. So I think Ganna is going to be the sprinter for Ineos this Grand Tour.
Poor Hajduk.
I'm honestly very happy that they're using Ganna this way, because using Ganna just purely as a domestique is just a waste of his talent. And seeing him as a sprinter is also just entertaining. seeing the giant among the small guys. It's cool. But let's take a look at the GC before stage six, because that does promise to be a nice GC battle. So right now in the red jersey, we have Remco Evenepoel, 11 seconds ahead of Enric Mas, Lenny Martinez at 17 seconds, Jonas Vingegaard at 37, Vlasov at 39, together with Uiterbroeks. They have not left each other's side. Roglic at 7 with 43 seconds, and then Ayuso at 44, Soler at 48, together with Almeida at 10. Any thoughts on that?
Thank you, Bobs. I forgot to mention him when we were talking about stage 3. He closed the gap on Soler and Kuss. And even after he did that, he still finished for Vlasov, while Vlasov has a sprint and Uiterbroeks doesn't. So, and the stage did even suit Uiterbroeks, because he is the best in stages with like 5 mountains up and down all day, high cages, and he already was better in stage 3. So yeah, I expect an amazing Grand Tour from Uiterbroeks, and I also expect him to finish higher than Vlasov.
Well, there was an article on Sporza this morning about Remco Evenepoel and his red jersey, that he wants to give it away as soon as possible to save the team and to take it back into the late second week or third week. And they mentioned a couple of names, and amongst those names were Arendsman and Uiterbroeks. Kuss.
And Vine.
How can you write an article and say that those guys aren't a major threat for the general classification in Madrid?
Yeah, like, I don't know.
They mentioned Lenny Martinez, the guy is very young, very good, but he will probably fade into the third week. It's his first Grand Tour. But guys like Arendsman, Vine, Kuss are all experienced in Grand Tours. So if they get 2 to 3 minutes, good luck. Take that back. It might happen, but it will not be that easy to take it back.
Possibly go wrong.
Yeah, so that was quite a weird article.
Yeah, definitely. So José de Kouwer laughed with the article himself on coverage today. I thought it was pretty funny.
Before the start on Saturday, a lot of people were talking about the amount of time Evenepoel would be allowed to lose on Jumbo, Vingegaard and Roglic. But now he's 37 seconds in front of them, which is a nice bonus. I still don't think it will be enough, of course, but it's quite remarkable, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that's mainly due to the TT that Jumbo had, where the puncture from Vingegaard, where the whole team waited for him. I think they lost like 25 seconds on Remco just at that point. So,
but still, they let him take 6 bonification seconds today as well. Once again, they are not interested in that. Vingegaard wasn't interested in that in Tour de France either. So yeah, I quite like it.
I think they're using their Jumbo tactics that they use on Pogacar as well, that they might say that the Tour will not be won with seconds but with minutes.
And also, besides that, we have 3 Belgians in the top 13 or 14, I think, with Uiterbroeks and Stef Kras as well. Mm-hmm. You guys mentioned it in the preview, Stef Kras. It's pretty nice to see.
Definitely. You wanted to add something?
I wanted to add something to the Remco Evenepoel bonification seconds thing. He's also, like, people say, one 15-second sprint doesn't do anything, but doing that every day definitely has a result on your legs in the end of a Grand Tour. Jonas isn't doing those efforts, Roglic isn't doing those efforts, and it definitely has something.
I agree with that it's the the accumulated thing of that small efforts can play a small role into the lot of stages of this Grand Tour. But both Roglic and Vingegaard know they can't beat Evenepoel on a flat sprint neither, because Remco is explosive as hell and he trained. You saw it the Monday on that uphill sprint. The guy can sprint. Everybody mentions explosivity is something that you have to be born with, but the guy went from very mediocre to punchy.
Normally that's not possible. That's that just because he's called Remco Evenepoel and he has those crazy genes. Normally that's not possible. You can raise your peak with like somewhat if you go to the gym, etc., but you can't raise it that much normally. So yeah, crazy.
All right, anything to add?
If not, except maybe the classification in domestic picks, but I don't remember the classification. I think Hans is last, but he won today, so he went minus 100, so he's now around 350 points, if I recall correctly.
He's on 270 points.
Oh, sorry.
I had a lot of bad luck with Brian Coquart.
Brian Coquart. Then the third is Dieter Loos.
Yes.
With his Van den Berg flop. Then myself, yes. Then Josh, and then Brom. I'm not sure.
Josh is leading, I think.
No, I'm 4 points ahead of Josh.
Ooh.
Okay, excuse me. And I do have something to add about the Vuelta. Geraint Thomas dropped, and
about the Vuelta, why not the Tour de France?
I mean the race itself, not our domestic picks. Geraint Thomas dropped, and Bernal seemed to be able to hold on, but he waited on Geraint Thomas in stage three to guide, to limit the time loss of Geraint Thomas. One, it's amazing to see Bernal in that shape, and two, I don't know if I was Ineos, where I would have let Bernal wait. Also, just keep him.
Give the guy some freedom.
Bernal lost 2 minutes and a half today as well. I don't know if he was involved in the crash. But
really? Damn.
Yeah.
He missed that.
Or he just wanted a little buffer to go into the break tomorrow and take his stage win.
That's shit.
I think he saved the legs a little bit to roll in easy.
What a wonderful story would that be? Egan Bernal on the top step in but a Grand Tour stage.
He was already 4 minutes behind if he lost 2.5 minutes today. So yeah. I don't get the point of that. He could have taken the red jersey.
I wouldn't want to give it to Egan Bernal either.
I don't see the problem, to be honest.
I think he can be a bit of a surprise if he suddenly finds good legs. It's just a risk that, as a Sudal Quickstep, I wouldn't be willing to take to give it to a former Tour de France winner. If it was Froome, okay. If it was Froome, sure. But not Bernal.
You never know if Froome finds his climbing legs again as well. So
not happening.
In the Ventoux stage? But if you give Bernal the red jersey, he will obviously try everything to stay in GC, so that's dangerous as hell.
Mm-hmm.
That's not dangerous at all.
It is.
Exactly. But we've been going on for a while, so let me wrap up today's Domestique Cycling Podcast. A big thank you to our audience for tuning in. If you enjoyed the episode, consider supporting us on Ko-Fi or Twitter. And if you're on YouTube, hit subscribe and turn on notifications. We appreciate your support and look forward to seeing you next time. Bye-bye.
Hasta la vista. Bye-bye. I've got the sparse, the same.